Thomas.
We're in corduroys. Tom was wearing corduroys too. Is this something that I...
It's like riders. It's like riders.
Is this a rider's
riders
loincloth or something? Would you like to talk about Rain, your new book? Is that your newest book? Do you have a book that's newer than Rain? Are you working on a new one? Or?
Yeah, there's one that's finished now.
Finished, okay.
And being marketed even...
Uh-huh. Is there a title? Can you say the title?
Second Chance.
Second Chance, all right. Okay. Rain. How did you come up with the idea for Rain? And where did that come from?
It's going to be a hell of an interview.
No, I spent a lot of years as an actor. And, both in college and in summer stock, and then became a member of Equity. And did industrials and that kind of stuff. And I was always fascinated by the idea of role playing. That a person can play a role for so long, where does the role begin to become reality? And the idea was sort of based on Yul Brynner, in that, you know, someone who has played a role for so many years and identified with that role, the way that their personality begins to take on aspects of that character.
Yeah.
And I knew several people who had been involved with the touring companies of the King and I, Yul Brynner's company, and they said that he became the king. That, you know, off stage as well as on, he was imperious and impatient and demanding and everything like that. It's, you know, real horror stories about the guy.
Yeah.
So with that idea, you know, taking it a step beyond the whole idea of breaking off a piece of your personality, breaking off, almost like a separation of personality, really, because the qualities that the character has are characters now that are no longer in the actor himself, and he's got to find some way to restore his identity, and at the same time solve a lot of other little problems.
I think one of the things that's really good about Rain is the use of the theater myths. It seemed to make it a very rich atmospheric. The scenes were really good, I think, when you had the different myths. Were those true? I mean,
a few of them were. Yeah, I mean, a lot of them were things that I had heard over the years, but the one in particular about the woman in the costume loft, the ghost in the costume loft, was a tale that was supposed to be true at a theater I worked at in Ohio, and I just found that real chilling. I mean, you know, not the idea of a person that you know is dead just turning and looking at you. I mean, it's the simplest thing in the world, really, and it's been done hundreds of times, but there's still something so basic about that, you know, just to be transfixed with a stare from...
And being recognized, dead. Or being recognized by something that is dead.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought a very effective scene was the scene with the cherubs.
Oh.
The grizzly...
right, where they fall off.
Yeah, where'd that come from?
That whole theater, really...
How you doing?
Alan, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good.
The theater is based on the Hershey Theater in Hershey, Pennsylvania, which Milton Hershey, who was, you know, the rich philanthropist, Hershey's Chocolate guy, built this theater in the 1910s and just spared no expense. And a lot of the physical qualities of, what do I call it, the Kirkland Theater, are taken almost directly from the Hershey Theater, which is a sumptuous palace, and just kept in impeccable, wonderful condition.
Yeah.
So there are, you know, little bas-reliefs and things like that.
I think you can really see the theater.
Yeah.
And I think the description of the theater is very good. You can really, really see the theater. Was this a difficult book to write, or was it easy to write?
Some parts were difficult. the family relationship. I'd never gone into so much, I guess, what is almost mainstream material as far as the love triangle.
Yeah.
And
well, I see that interested me there because I think that's a good point. That was a mainstream section of the book. Mm-hmm. Yet I guess the entire thrust of the novel was supernatural.
Yeah.
Was there a point where you had to decide whether it's going to be supernatural or mainstream?
No, it was always supernatural for me.
Uh-huh.
And the supernatural, the mainstream elements of the book, I think, are more in tune with what I've been trying to do, which is concentrate more on characters and relationships.
Haven't seen you all weekend. Hello. How are you doing?
How are you doing? I haven't broken into your room late at night.
Well, this time.
You got a baby in there. No. Just keep
squatting in the
hall.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm
sorry. The mainstream elements, they just seem more and more important to me. I mean, with every book, I've felt the need to get into characters more deeply.
Uh-huh.
And that really sort of took over, I think, in a lot of places from the supernatural. I hope that it wasn't.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hello, how are you doing?
Okay,
well, we're doing an interview.
A little interview.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
Tape. Oh, okay. Gotta have tape.
Okay.
The mainstream elements of the characters you're building more towards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I hope that it blended. I hope that there was a smooth blend between those two.
Well, it seemed like an intricate development of those characters.
Yeah.
I
did a lot of, I probably did more plotting.
Oh my goodness. How about that? Young reader? Yeah. Isn't that good? That's great.
Man, we can get me up.
How you doing?
Sorry.
Okay.
I never really got a chance to talk to you.
Yeah? Well, let me click this button. We're doing an interview here for...
I remember what I was saying. I was saying that I outlined it real heavily. So a lot of the work was done, before I started writing. So once I started writing, I had a real good idea of where the book was going, where the characters were.
It seemed very involved, and it seemed like you...
Do you always work with an outline? I've done that ever since I did Lowland Rider. I wrote about two-thirds of Lowland Rider, and I just really rough outlined back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't feel right to me. I mean, I hit a point in the book where I said, this is stupid. These characters, as I've written them, wouldn't do this. And I mean, it was something they had to do for the sake of the plot.
Yeah.
But it wasn't right. And I put that book away, and I just couldn't work on it. And then I wrote McCain's Dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
And, a year later came back and saw how to get around the problem by changing some things beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
But ever since that happened, I've been a real heavy outliner, and I find that I really enjoy working that way. I feel much more in control of the book. It's almost like I write the book in my head, before I sit down.
Well, does that affect you sitting down to write the book? I mean, do you feel like you've already written the book, and do you feel like it's
but a lot of the joy for me is in the writing. I mean, I know the scene, and I know what happens in the scene. I know what the characters are going to do and why they're going to do it. So when I write, it's like you have your pencil sketch, like an artist has pencil sketches, but when I sit down to do the painting, then that's where the fun comes in, that joy of writing.
Yeah.
See,
I think it's interesting because you and I have totally different styles
of working.
Because the only time I tried to do an outline, I did the outline, it was like, well, now I know the story, and it's like,
yeah,
it's not really
it's
interesting.
Not fun for you.
No, it's not, it's not really interesting to me anymore if I know what's going to happen.
No, it's okay. I mean, that doesn't bother me. I've never felt that way. I mean, I even outline short stories. If I do a short story, I have maybe a one-page outline of where I'm going. And most of it is to make sure that my character motivation is right, because I'm so nuts about getting the characters and their motivations correct that if I have something in the plot that even strikes me in the least way that it might not ring true, then that really bothers me, and I've got to find something in that character to make him
right.
You know, it's like getting like a director. You have a bunch of actors, and you've got to make them act a certain way. So you want to make sure that you have the right people.
But it is. I mean, it is like directing
a
play or a film because you do everything. I mean, you obviously. Mm-hmm.
It's like directing and acting.
It is.
Everything.
And the lighting. Do the lighting.
Set design.
And it is very much so like directing in your own play or movie. But I think it's interesting that all writers have almost a different style of approaching the work. And you can't really say that one is more organized than the other.
If it works. That's the key. If it works and if you feel good and that's how you like to do it, then that's what you should do.
Right.
And that works for you.
Can you think of anything else to ask this sterling gentleman? Can you say anything about the new book, or would you rather not?
I'll just say that it's not really a horror novel.
Okay.
It's much more mainstream, even so more so than Rain. There's a touch of fantasy, a love story that weaves its way through, a lot of suspense, and some ecological concerns. It's just a novel.
Well, I had to ask you this, talking to other writers, primarily known as horror writers, and talking about the new book they're doing. Many of them say, well, it's not really a horror novel.
Yeah.
And I'm finding that it's kind of a theme of this convention. You know, the next book is not really a horror novel.
Why are we all leaving?
It's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, because your last book wasn't a horror novel.
Right. And then my next one is neither. So, you know, what's going on? I wonder what's going on.
I don't know. You know, I think maybe it's your reaction to the limits. You know, I've kind of changed in that if you ask me a year ago if mind being called horror writer, I probably would have said no. But now it's like, yeah, I do. Because of the limits that have been put on, not so much by the readers and the writers, but by the market, by the bookstores, by the editors, by the publishers. And it
not that was just me feeling this thing. And it seems that everybody's feeling this way this year.
Yeah.
And it's been more than just this year, of course.
Yeah. But it really, you know, and even if, like, with Horror Writers of America, you know, I signed on for another year as vice president, but I have to start asking myself, is this right?
I know.
I mean, it's good that we're doing things for writers and that, you know, writers can have a voice, but is this just one more thing that limits us?
Right.
In the eyes of everybody.
I'm afraid it is.
Yeah. I am too.
You know, and I guess I have some questions to ask you about HWA, too, because it seems to me that HWA has become almost like a fractious pit of arguments and disagreements. It's not really moving anywhere.
Well, we've started, in fact, we had a meeting today, the officers, talking about some things that we'd like to see change, and some new directions that we'd like to go in, and things that, you know, will really be more helpful.
But it does, you know, it seems like the leadership. It's not the leadership as much as it's the membership. And the membership seems to be...
You've got people who are in it for different reasons. I mean, you have new writers, and those new writers expect to be educated. And I think that's part of our function. I think we have to educate people to, you know, what's good for them and what's bad for them. At the same time, we have to appeal to the veteran writers, because we need them for their knowledge and for their expertise and for their prestige to make the organization viable.
Yeah.
But that for me is the difficult thing. I mean, what is there in HWA that somebody like Rick McCammon should join be a member? I mean, what can we offer you?
Right.
And that's, I think, where we run into.
I know, and if it is that limitation, if it's another limit, you know, it's like.
Yeah. I mean, then, you know, people think of you, oh, a member of Horror Writers of America must be a horror writer.
Yeah.
You know. It's like having writers, you know, calling back to the old thing of having, calling some horror writers splatterpunk. Well, that's wrong. I mean, sometimes they write splatterpunk material.
Whatever that
sometimes
is.
Sometimes they don't. Whatever that
splatterpunk
is.
Is.
You know, rough definitions of it, but
that's just a name.
To call someone a splatterpunk narrows them even more and makes them less of a of a full writer. And, I mean, even the people most heavily identified with her, I think, are mm-hmm. reacting against mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing.
We were talking to some other people about this idea that horror fiction is judged by the worst, not by the best. The film. That is the film.
Yes.
I mean,
it seems like I was going to say, it's not the fiction.
It's not the tradition of the literature. It's just the films, the knockoff, easy films that have nothing to say about anything. And when you say you're a horror writer, this is what you do. It's like, oh, well, I saw Friday the 13th.
Yeah, you write about teenage
and
Right.
And so I don't like that.
No.
So I won't read your book because it's like that.
Yes.
You write horror.
Yes. Well, that's what a lot of people say. And I don't read horror.
And it's very, you know,
they haven't read horror and they don't realize what it is.
Yeah,
I mean, the best of it. There's a lot of junk out there, let's be frank, in fiction. But there's a lot of good stuff, too, that people just turn off to because of the other media.
But it's gotten to be such a pigeonhole. I mean, the genre has narrowed and narrowed and become really there's a lot of crap coming out, so really.
Well, it's sort of the same ghettoization that science fiction, that happened in science fiction years ago. I mean, you know, you look 20 years ago at the horror novels then, you're talking The Exorcist, Rosemary's Baby, and they were good. There wasn't much bad horror fiction then because it had to compete with the mainstream.
Yeah.
And then when the horror boom came along, when publishers wanted, you know, 2, 3, 4 horror titles a month, they had to have those titles, whether they found 4 good books a month or not. And I don't think there are 4 good horror novels published a month. So it that kind of, I think, dragged the field down. And there were more books. And somebody at chain bookstore said, hey, let's put all those horror books together. And then all the covers looked the same, whereas with, you know, if they were in among the general fiction, they would stand out more. So it's, we've been ghettoized. And at first I think we thought, oh, this is neat because horror is being recognized.
Right, it's its own place and it's being the same as science fiction or fantasy or whatever. But, you know, it's.
But we were recognized essentially as, like Japanese Americans were recognized during World War II. And then, you know, they put us in in concentration camps.
Does that frustrate you? Is that a frustrating.
It's frustrating in terms of the market.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have horror fans who like Red Rain, which is much more mainstream, but really liked it. Sure, there's a horror element in it, but you know, that was rewarding to me to have so many people have a positive reaction to the book, just because it was kind of different from what I'd done before. So, yeah, I think if readers like your work, they're willing to follow, and, you know.
Well, I was at a convention recently, and somebody said, well, this new book doesn't sound like a horror novel. It doesn't sound like a, what genre is it? I said, look, please don't talk about genre. Forget about genre. Talk about category. Just to say, hopefully it's going to be a good book and you're going to enjoy it. It's either it's a good book or it's a bad book. But please just don't categorize it right off the bat here. But readers seem to want to categorize, some readers do.
What's the reaction been among readers that you talked to about mine? I mean, have you had anybody with a negative feeling because there wasn't a supernatural element to it?
No, but people have enjoyed it, but there's been a question of, does this mean you're moving away from supernatural horror?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that newsletter.
Yeah.
People are asking me, it's like, well, mine wasn't really supernatural and the voice light doesn't sound like it. Is he getting away from it?
Yeah.
And we've talked a little bit about that, but it's like, he doesn't know what he's going to do.
Yeah,
now, are they asking out of curiosity or concern?
I think some are asking out of concern.
Some is concern. And some are like I was with mine. It had no supernatural element, and I liked it because it didn't.
But yes, me too. I mean, I read that book with delight, in a way. I mean, it was harrowing.
But I'm finding people, though, who just want to read horror, and that's all they want to read.
Well,
you
hate to say you don't want readers. But if that's all they want, they can go get that somewhere else.
Now, are they your readers, or are they readers of a particular type of book? And if they read this particular type of book, they don't want to read anything else but this particular type of book, and they're not going to necessarily follow you if you try to do something else.
Well, then I have to leave them behind.
I think that's right.
Because I've got to grow as a writer. I can't you know, write what a readership expects me to write and nothing else.
Yeah. And it really is bad for a writer to do the same thing over and over again.
Oh, it is. And your work gets flat. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen it happen.
And I think you as a writer would get very unhappy.
Absolutely.
And it would show in your work.
Absolutely. But, you know, I've heard some writers say that the better you get, the harder it is to sell. And I mean, what a chilling kind of statement. I never thought of it in those terms exactly, but, you know, I've almost, with novels, I've kind of had that reaction sometimes.
Well, I hope that's not a reflection on the readership of a...
No, I don't think it is. I think it's more the idea of what editors and publishers see the readership
being.
And the bookstore chain. I think that, you know, as much as we all need them, they've become, in a way, a negative influence in some ways toward creativity.
They cater to the people that want to buy the books because they've got a skeleton on the cover.
Right, exactly.
That
that's why they put them under the horror.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They're catering to those people when they're
it's a
representing
marketing.
A small element of...
It's a marketing tool, and for them, it makes sense, and it's profitable, and it lets them move more product.
Yeah.
And the difference between them and us, the writers and the intelligent reader, is that we don't think of these as products. You know, we think of them as something that, you know, we spend years sometimes with.
Well, our children. We really...
They are.
Our
and
children.
They're the expressions of, I don't want to get corny, but like our souls are in those thoughts and the things that we want to leave.
Yeah.
Say. But, you know, sometimes to the people who sell them, they're apples and oranges and eggs.
I know, I've often thought that that publishing is probably, well, I guess the film industry is too, and every kind of creative thing is. But when a person puts a year or more of their life into a book, and it comes out on a bookstore and a bookshelf, it's maybe there for 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
it's gone, because it didn't catch on for whatever reason, it wasn't promoted well, or was
and
something.
Sometimes it doesn't get from the shelf at all.
Yeah. But, you know, a person writes, works for a year, you know, a year of their life, and that's their child, and then the thing goes, and it gets stripped and thrown away, and that's tough.
Yeah.
That is really tough.
Unfortunately, it's a reality.
Yeah, and it happens every day.
Yeah.
But writing is kind of a natural weeding out process, it seems to me. It seems to me that if you're tough enough to hang in there through all these frustrations and problems, you eventually come out all right.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the field is going through tough times right now.
Yeah.
It may be the best thing to sort of snap everybody back to their senses.
Because there really just may be too many horror writers.
It's true.
There really may be,
yeah.
You know. And there needs to be a weeding out.
Yeah.
Well, it seems that the publishers are saying now that horror is not selling well, so they're dropping titles per month and dropping lines and stuff. At the same time, there's a bigger glut of new, previously unpublished authors than there's ever been.
That's because they can pay them $2,500 advances and they'll take it.
So you're getting more crap out there that is going to kill it.
Yeah.
It's going to kill the genre.
Yeah.
It's going to end up that the novels, certainly not all the novels, but the novels that the chain stores want to promote and that sell are going to be the equivalent of Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th.
Right.
And
sure.
It's going to keep dropping down.
Yeah.
We're getting off the grass.
No, we're all right. We're going to snap back here. Any questions, Mr. Roy? That's good.
Is it all right?
Yeah.